When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Radio Times Meets podcast, presented by Francis Taylor. Darkly comic BBC series Inside Number 9 is known for being unpredictable, groundbreaking and terrifying. But Deadline, a live episode broadcast in October 2018, broke all the rules and took even the show's biggest fans by surprise. Creators and stars Steve Pemberton and Reese Shearsmith sat down for an exclusive interview at the BFI and Radio Times Television Festival to discuss just how they masterminded what was described by many as the TV event of the year.
So the last time I spoke to both of you was ahead of the live episode last year. Did pull the wool over everybody's eyes. You must be very proud of what you pulled off.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to keep any secrets in telly because everyone wants to know what's going to happen, so they can watch it and go, oh yeah, that's what I read was going to happen the night before. So it was lovely to do something where we could talk about the anxiety of doing a live thing, because that was real, and you know, everyone was saying, are you worried that anything might go wrong? And we were like, well, hopefully, you know, and we were able to sort of talk to speak about the truth of that, and yet we knew we had this big thing that we couldn't get out, otherwise we'd lost everything, hadn't we, if it became apparent that we were going to deliberately look like we'd gone wrong.
Well, we wanted to sell Deadline as an episode with the story of this mobile phone and everything, and so it was enjoyable trying to spin out what that story might have been and who these characters were, whereas really we knew they were quite disposable.
Hello? Hello, can you hear me? Sorry, I can't. Can you put the phone closer to your mouth? I can't quite hear.
Maybe you could turn that into a real episode at some point, that storyline.
Well, I wish now we had filmed that entire episode, and then when it went wrong on the night, those that watched it saw that, and then if you went to iPlayer, you just got Deadline and you never saw this other thing that happened only on that night for the live experience of it. But there was no time to be filming pretend episodes.
But in a filming one,
the
never
real
mind
ones,
two.
Never mind the real ones, yeah.
How early did you know that this is what you wanted to do with the live episode and create this almost like, well, it reminded me of Ghostwatch, to be honest, a sort of Michael Parkinson 1990s.
Yeah. Well, they asked us to do the live episode and we didn't see a reason to do it because it felt a little bit like you get a lot. It's not that special anymore. I mean, they're obviously really hard to pull off well, but everyone does them. Soaps do them, and you get these events surrounding when something's going to happen live. So we thought the only reason to do it would be if it was to play with the fact that it is live, and that would mean, could we make it look like it's gone wrong? And that was, I think, the kernel of why it thought it was suddenly an exciting idea to use that as a piece of television.
Did you have any inspiration in another shows? Again, I've just mentioned Ghostwatch, but anything like that you drew on? Or was this just your pure creation?
Well, I mean, it was in our minds, wasn't it? Because we know Ghostwatch very well. And
yeah.
That was a great thing. I mean, the funny thing about Ghostwatch is it didn't pretend to be a live show. It was a drama, and it came on. It's a Ghostwatch by Stephen Volk. And there was no tricking the audience into thinking this is a sort of first in television where they're doing an exploration in ghosts and hunting, and an early gestation of Most Haunted, really, wasn't it, Ghostwatch? But we didn't, we wanted to make it look like it was a normal episode, and then as truthfully as we could play the bit where it goes wrong, you know, and then go into real versions of ourselves.
I didn't think they'd let us do it. I mean, we wrote the script pretty much on spec and sent it in to Adam, and I thought he'd come back with, no, what were you thinking? We can't do this on the BBC. So we were amazed, really, that it took on a life of its own once we'd written it and had the idea. And
because it is an anathema to the notion of trying to keep an audience if you're deliberately playing with the idea that it's broken down, you know. Mm. And I think a lot of people turned off, but I'm only the more proud of that because I think we got it right. It was a sort of a brilliant thing that people thought, right, oh, that really is it. It's not a trick. Turn over.
There's also so many precarious elements in it in terms of sending out a tweet and putting the actual TV on as well. I mean, I don't know, did all of that work exactly how you were planning it on the night?
Yeah, the only things that went wrong were what we wanted to go wrong, and that was the joy of the night, really. In terms of what we wanted to achieve, everything was spot on. Because people were flicking over to make sure that there was news footage on BBC One of the Brazilian elections, and people actually flicked over, and it was a very memorable bit with, you know, big yellow and green shirts, and that was lovely to have. And then we had the tweet went out, and that had an amazing response. So yeah, things could have gone wrong, and if we'd made some mistakes ourselves that weren't deliberate mistakes, that would have kind of undermined the whole thing. So honestly, it was the most exhilarating thing to do, and really proud that we managed to get it wrong.
Yeah,
right.
it was very frightening in the beginning. I've never done live television. It was, and interviews sometimes, but the pressure as we built down to that, going live, quite literally, I was my playing that vicar with that cup of tea. I was shaking literally. I thought, I've done so much theatre, and yet this is nothing. This feels so frightening, and I had to completely really focus and put it to bed. But what was great was having the elements of the archive stuff peppered throughout the evening. We could recoup and go, right, we've got the next bit, you ready? Good. Mm. And it wasn't like once it began at 10 o'clock, that was it till 10:30. It was like we had these respites where we could recover. But it was still quite scary.
Not surprised. How did you feel as well beforehand? I mean, we were shaking. Were you quite that nervous?
Yeah. I mean, I had quite a bit of business to do in the kitchen and you know, the timing, everything. And as Reese said, the adrenaline, when it gets into you, you know, you do get quite shaky. And it was utterly nerve-wracking waiting for this tap on the shoulder. They were counting down, but I knew that I'd get this little tap and I would have to walk out in front of the live cameras and think. And as I was putting my key in the door to it, I was thinking, my mum's watching this now. Everyone I know is watching it live. Oh, yeah. And what goes through your head is, you know, you can't help but have all these weird thoughts. So, but once we settled into it and we got that first scene done, that was a big relief, wasn't it?
So. Yeah. And then it was quite fun, actually, the rest of it. Mm. Playing the bits where we're in the dressing room just chatting about it. It was good fun. We'd rehearsed that a lot, and it was enjoyable, yeah.
Had you added any of those bits in the script later on as well? Because, you know, in the dressing room, you're saying we're not even going out on Halloween and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that was put in later when we found out we weren't going in on Halloween. Mm-hmm. I said, you know what we could do? We'd actually have a dig at them for not putting it on Halloween night. I could just say it. So that was added later. But there was the one factor throughout the night was that we had to be on time. So sometimes they would run in and say, be a bit quicker in this next bit because we're stretching a bit. So I think the tendency to do a lot when you do live stuff, you gabble and it comes in too short. So we weren't doing that. We needed to get quicker. But it was good. It went really like clockwork.
And it was a brilliant team as well because, you know, we had to get a ghost into position and then the camera had to go past and then that ghost had to leave. And so the whole team and the whole, you know, I wish we'd filmed the backstage and what was going on behind the camera because it was absolutely fantastic watching all these people who knew exactly what they had to do with their job. And then what went on in the gallery as well. God knows, we've no idea how stressful or not that was. But yeah, it was a really exciting evening.
How many people had you told as well in your lives? And when you got your phones back, did it have a lot of sort of commiserating messages from people saying, I'm so sorry this is going so horribly wrong for you?
Didn't tell anybody. I mean, I didn't.
Yeah, I think I told about two people, but not any detail, just that we're doing a live thing.
And then you killed them.
And then they were
eliminated.
Disposed of now.
No, that was the fun of it. I mean, I didn't tell my family, I didn't tell my my partner, and we had in my house, obviously I wasn't there, but we had a power cut. So she was desperately trying to find some way of watching it on a phone or an iPad because the television had gone off and she was really... And then when the picture came on and, of course, the sound goes, which is the first problem, she's like, oh, no, I can't believe it. A lot of people felt very sick for us. Put a message on Twitter.
Right.
Me and Steve Pemberton on BBC Two now.
Right, don't want to tweet that.
Yeah.
Because my phone was on because I had to do the tweet. It was my phone in the scene and I had text coming through going, oh, God, I'm so sorry. And I was thinking, oh, my God, they're all falling for it. And I was just swiping them away. It's good.
That must have been amazing sitting there while you're on the telly looking at people.
The best one was from Darren Brown, who I thought, this is the kind of thing you would do. And we've even tricked you. So I was very pleased about that.
Well, that's it. The reaction from everyone was just amazing. Was it what you were expecting from viewers? There was such an outpouring for it.
It was
more,
better,
wasn't it? Yeah, much more.
Because we thought there's, you know, people know Inside Number 9. They know that we like to kind of play a few games with the audience, and so one of the fears is that, you know, if three or four people on Twitter went straight away, oh, this isn't real. But and of course the odd one or two did, but the overwhelming majority of people, even knowing the show as well as they do, absolutely fell for it. And people who work in television as well, absolutely fell for it.
I don't think we quite realised the power of how sorry people would feel for us about it looking like it had gone wrong in that section where the sound goes. I think it's pathetic. It's so sad. Watching it back, you look at it, and it's pitiable to see us still going along when the sound has gone. And I imagine people that were gunning for it to go right were so like, oh no, I've worked so hard on it. And
it's the most horrific thing.
It is, of all the things.
More than ghosts or anything. Wow, just that moment.
Thing you've ever done.
Yeah, it was great.
Must admit, I felt like that watching at home. Yeah, so speaking to you beforehand, I thought, oh no. But again, that just shows how incredibly well you pulled it off.
Yeah, it was good.
So obviously we've got the fifth series on the horizon as well. Where are you up to with that at the minute?
It's still being put together and edited. So we've seen some of it, but it's in the post-production phase, so it's all still in its component parts. We filmed it. And it's good, I think. Yeah, exciting.
It must be harder, though, to up the ante increasingly, because obviously, you've done so many special episodes before, but after this, does it bring a bit of added pressure now for what viewers will expect from the next series?
You can't write with those expectations in mind. And if anything, you kind of thought, well, having done this very experimental thing, let's not go anywhere near that now, because you can't play with that anymore. We've done that. Let's go back to telling really good half-hour stories and see the different genres we can come up with and the different locations we come up with. But we didn't think now we have to do something that's even more shocking than the broadcast breaking down. I think then it would start to become tricksy and repetitive and predictable, and one thing Inside Number 9 strives not to be is predictable. So you'll have to wait and see what Series 5 has in store.
Well, that's a perfect way to end. So thank you both very much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Radio Times Meets Inside Number 9 podcast. We hope you have enjoyed this episode, and don't forget to subscribe for future interviews. It was presented by Francis Taylor and produced by Ed Beck, Ollie Alder and Ross Shepherd.